Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Maggie Kurth. Maggie is the senior science reporter at 538. Hey, Maggie, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing just great. Thanks.
Yeah, we're so glad that you're joining us, and we're looking forward to what kinds of new cool tools you can suggest to us.
Yeah, I was happy to be brought on. You know, it's been a while since we talked.
Yeah, it has been a little while. So Maggie, your first tool is something called Basil and a Tube. And tell us, what is that? And how are you using it?
So I have been kind of trapped in my house, as everyone has been trapped in their houses, and trying not to go to the grocery store very often. But when I did the last time, I ran across just this tube of fresh basil that's all kind of chopped up into a paste with a little bit of oil. So it doesn't have any flavoring. It's kind of like a pesto, but without all of the other stuff that you would put into a pesto. And it's pretty fantastic because it means I can get fresh tasting herbs all through my quarantine without having them go bad on me. So I have been using it to make cream sauce. I also used it in a cocktail that I invented one night by taking a bunch of strawberries that my kids had not eaten and dicing them up really fine and putting some of this, you know, squeezy basil toothpaste up on top of it. And then muddling that up with some brown sugar and a little bit of apple cider vinegar, and then tossing some bourbon on top of all of it.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
It is absolutely amazing.
And so do you, once you open it, do you need to keep it refrigerated, or does it have like a shelf life, or how does that work?
Yeah, it has to stay refrigerated, but it's good for up to a month or more. You know, I've had one of them now for like the entire time I have been trapped in my house, and it's been still really good and lasting, and it's fantastic.
Do they have them for other herbs besides basil?
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah. I've also got one for ginger. And I saw but have not tried the ones for cilantro and lemongrass and garlic. So there's all sorts of different little things that you can do that might not be available as easily right now, just going to the grocery store and getting fresh stuff anytime you want it.
Do you order this online or do you buy it at your local market?
I'm just picking it up at the grocery store right now. I live about four blocks from a local chain, but it's a kind of just like one of those great big giant grocery stores. So it's the one I've been going to because I can go in there and stay far away from other people because it's enough of a big enough store. And they just had it over by the regular herbs.
Very nice. That looks like a really useful way to make herbs. Or not to make herbs, but to have herbs that are fresher than dried up herbs.
Yeah, for sure. It's really nice to have around.
So Maggie, why don't you tell us about the next tool? It's a Bluetooth speaker, and I took a peek. It's very unique looking.
Yeah, so it's a thing that several people in my life have, and I had been sort of admiring but hadn't picked up one until, again, quarantine happened, and suddenly I really wanted better sound in my apartment. And decided kind of on the spur of the moment to just go ahead and grab it. But it has all of these neat light show settings that are part of it. So you can kind of program it to do different kind of LED patterns and colors and custom colors. I'm using it a lot right now for my daughters. They like to listen to a meditation tape type of thing at night before they go to bed. And they really love having this just multicolored rainbow light show happening while they're lying in their beds all tucked in with the lights off. It's pretty great. And the sound quality is excellent. And it's all just like a Bluetooth speaker, so I can move it all over the house. And that's the other thing that makes it really great for the girls is that they can hear their, you know, their meditation tape that they're that's playing off of my phone, but I can have my phone still with me in a different room. I don't have to just completely give it over to them for an hour. So it's a really nice little setup, and I used it the last two nights for a little treat that I'm giving myself right now. Have you heard of the composer Max Richter?
No,
I have not.
Okay, so he has this, my boyfriend told me about this, and it's, I'd never heard about it before, but he composed this entire concert piece that's 8 hours long, and it's designed for people to listen to while they're sleeping. So you're supposed to fall asleep to it and wake up to it and have it playing all night long while you are sleeping. And I have done that the last two nights, and it's absolutely wonderful. And just this very great, trippy, peaceful experience that, you know, I have really vivid dreams during, and I wake up feeling really refreshed. And the speaker captures all of these great low sounds that are happening throughout this entire orchestral piece. And it also has a battery life that lasts long enough that I don't have to plug it in during the entire 8 hours. So that's pretty cool too.
Wow. And are the lights changing in synchronized to what the music is?
The lights are? Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah. They kind of flash with the sound.
And that sounds really cool.
Are they programmable?
They are. Yeah. You can kind of change the speed and change what colors you want. And there's like three or four different settings. And I haven't really tried this part yet, but you can take multiples of these and use the app on your phone to gang them together. So they have like a party mode. So like the next time I'm actually able to get together with my people who also have this, we could spread them out through an entire house and have a party with three different speakers all playing the same thing.
That is so cool. Yeah, how fun.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's called the Pulse 3.
Yep.
Waterproof portable Bluetooth speaker, light show and sound. It's probably not like Alexa that you can actually talk to it and have it answer questions though, right?
No, I didn't want that. I am one of those people who finds Alexa creepy and kind of just wanted a speaker. I think you can give it in, like, if you can set it up so you can tell it to like turn up the volume or something, but I haven't tried that yet.
Okay. That looks like a really fun thing to have.
It's been pretty great. And like I say, my girls love it.
And because it's runs on a battery and Bluetooth, that means that you could set it up like outside if
yeah.
it was near your home.
Yeah, exactly. I've actually used it in the backyard on a couple of the really nice days that we've had, you know, playing a book on tape for the girls while they're climbing on the jungle gym. And it's been fantastic. I just have to sit my phone like, you know, in the window. And it works great.
That's very nice. So moving back to herbs, you have some smoked garlic powder that you like.
Yeah. So this is another thing. You know, this grocery store down the street from my house, is not the fancy grocery store, and it's not like the co-op. It's just like generic, boring grocery store. And I hadn't really been using it very often, but I've pretty much switched all the way over there because I want to have like more space between me and other people and just because it's so close. And one of the things that I figured out that they had that I didn't know about was this whole section where they, you know, sell pre-bagged bulk spices and have things like, you know, smoked garlic powder that I just had never really seen before and sort of bought on a whim just to you know, play around with and have something fun during quarantine. And it has turned out to be really, really delicious. Last night I used it on Brussels sprouts. My oldest daughter has been using it on toast with butter and garlic and honey. And it just has this really, really fantastic, you know, sort of hickory thing happening that's very, you know, very about the smell and changes the taste not a ton, but it's just nice and mellow, garlicky goodness. So I looked up and found that places you can buy it online, and there are recipes where you can make your own if you have the right kind of grill. And it seems like it's actually pretty easy to just put together at home. So, you know, I might end up trying to do that myself at some point.
That sounds cool.
And this is, but it's 100% garlic just with a smoke flavor on it.
No. So it is garlic that has been smoked. And then the garlic that's been smoked is dried and turned into powder.
Ah, so the smoking's first, and then it's dehydrated and powdered.
Yep.
I got it now.
Yep.
Okay. And so the price is pretty reasonable, too. It's like $3 for a container. How long does that last?
I do not know yet, because I'm still on my first one. But it's, you know, it's been kind of, I've been using it similarly to just a regular container of garlic powder, and it's been doing fine. I'm maybe using it up a little bit faster because it's so delicious.
Okay. Well, that's a good one. Let's take a look at, your fourth tool, which is a digital camera, made for kids.
Yeah. So this is a weird one. I did not expect when I got these that I was going to like them very much. There's something that my mom got for my daughters at Christmas. And I was at first just kind of like, seriously, really, we're doing digital cameras. Okay. but as the girls have played with them, I've found all these really interesting little features that this camera has. And one of the things they just figured out that it can do is make stop motion animation, like little stop motion animation films. So it has a setting where they can go in and take a bunch of pictures and, you know, move a toy across the table, and then the camera will automatically stitch them together into a little video with music.
Very cool.
Does the camera, in doing this animation, does it give you a faint picture of the previous image so that you can use it to line up the next shot?
A little bit. Yeah. So it has a little screen on the back where you can see the pictures that you're taking. It's not like the world's greatest camera, as you might guess. But you can see sort of how you can line up the shots and kind of get them all together. And it has like some other fun little things where like the girls really like to take pictures of people and then add these little animations and stickers on them. And so there's a whole bunch of photos of me with like flower pots on my face. And they've been taking them with us on walks and taking pictures of trees and puddles in the alley, and it's pretty delightful.
And so does it run on like an SD card, like a normal digital camera?
Yeah, it's got a tiny little SD card in there. It also can just plug into your computer, and you can download stuff directly from it onto the computer. It runs on batteries, but they've been using it a ton, and I haven't had to change the batteries since Christmas, so it lasts a decent amount of time. And it's also really sturdy. Like, my youngest daughter is 4, and the number of times she has dropped this thing is just astronomical. And it has yet to have anything bad happen to it.
That's awesome. So Maggie, in the time we have left, you are doing science writing for 538.com. And you've been doing a lot of COVID reporting, which is really cool. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things you've been looking into about this novel coronavirus?
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of stories around uncertainty and scientists sort of trying to understand this thing, you know, as it's happening in the fog of war, which is really hard to do, and we really don't know a lot about it yet. And there have been a lot of things that have sort of come up where, you know, you're hearing different information from different experts, and it seems conflicting and it seems really confusing. And one of the things that we've really focused on at 538 is sort of digging into, you know, why those disparities exist and what it means to try to do science when we don't know what the answers are, you know, what it means to make decisions when we don't know what the answers are. So we've covered the modeling that they do to kind of make predictions about the spread of the virus. We've covered the science of hand washing, which turns out to be surprisingly imprecise. And we've done some stuff around like face masks and why you get different answers about safety from different people, largely just because there's not that much evidence out there and the holes can sort of be filled in by personal opinion. So people do. I mean, it's been a really exhausting and rewarding experience over the last, I guess, what, month and a half now? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a request as a reader, mm-hmm. that some of the science bent could do. It's been a long request during this pandemic. I've tried to get folks at Wired to do it, but nobody has yet done it, which is a real dive into the science of the testing. The testing differences between, like, what were the South Koreans using as their test when they were doing 10,000 tests a day at the very early? What were the Italians and the Iranians using? What were they actually testing for?
Yeah.
What does the test? And of course, there's all kinds. There's the antibody test, there's the serological test, but just the differences around the world in the testing, what they were actually testing for, what the reagents were, what the SNPs were, and nobody has really done, that I've seen, a deep dive into the comparative world of that testing. And I think testing, I've said this for a long time, is going to be the story of this pandemic will be a story of testing.
Yeah, I did a story that was maybe not quite that detailed, but we did get into early on in March, did a piece that was basically explaining, you know, what this PCR test is and what the difference is between the CDC and the WHO test and between, you know, the different tests that were sort of available at that time. So that people kind of better understood what it was that was slowing things down, which was these shortages in the reagents for the most part, the reagents and also the swabs, actually, because it turns out that most of the world's swabs were being made in Italy and kind of got that supply chain sort of got hit early on.
So what was Korea when they were doing really early on 10,000 tests a day?
Yeah.
What were they using? Where were they getting their swabs from? Why did they have so many tests available at that time?
Well, so a big part of that turns out to be because they had gone through SARS and they had had this brush with MERS a few years ago. These are these viruses that are relatives of COVID. And they, because of that, had put together this really big stockpile of these important testing ingredients, knowing that they were going to, you know, things were going to come back and they were going to need this again and they were going to need a lot of it. So when they needed to test, they weren't waiting for things to show up. They had it all. Whereas the US system, you know, a lot of our healthcare has gone to this just-in-time supply chain thing where you know, having excess around is waste. So we didn't have more than we needed until we needed more than we had.
Sure. And back to the Koreans. So what were they actually testing in those tests?
So basically all of these tests, these diagnostic tests, are pretty similar. They're all, you know, basically a PCR test that is taking RNA from the virus and turning it into a DNA and then replicating the DNA. What the difference is between the World Health Organization-based test that South Korea was using and the CDC test that we were using early on is basically in terms of what little snippets of the virus that the whole system is set up to look for. So you kind of take these little snippets, and they're called primers. And when you're copying the DNA, when you're making copies and sort of growing it, these little primers will only grow it if they find that snippet of the virus DNA. So that's how you make sure that you're only growing COVID, you're not growing something else. So the CDC and the World Health Organization tests use different primers. And it's not that, talking to experts about this, you know, theirs wasn't any better necessarily than the CDC's in terms of the primers. They had good primers. We had good primers. The real big difference was that they had the supplies to actually do it, and they had the network of testing centers ready to go, and we did not. And that made a huge difference in what they were able to do.
And in Iran, was Iran using the WHO SNPs and primers?
I don't know the answer to that. I haven't really looked much at Iran's testing.
And what about Italy?
Kind of similar. I think most places outside of the U.S. were using tests that were based around the World Health Organization's. At this point, there's tons and tons of different options. I'm actually working on a story right now about just the proliferation of these tests that are available. You know, at this point, there's 70 different serological tests that are out there in the U.S. And a bunch of different PCR tests. Some of them are based on the CDC primers. Some of them are based on completely different ones. But I think initially it was kind of just the World Health Organization test and the CDC.
Yeah, well, I think that it would be helpful to have a comprehensive look, like sounds like you're working on, published, because I think that would be really helpful and might answer some of the questions about why there are some of these huge differences in in the world in terms of the response. It could be hereditary, it could be environmental, it could be health systems, but it could also be the tests.
Yeah, it could absolutely be the tests. You know, I think one of the things that we are sort of finding with these serological tests right now, which are different, the PCR tests are the ones that are basically telling you if you are currently infected, and the serological tests are for sort of telling you if you have had and recovered from this. So they test for like different time periods, different things. But the serological tests, the way that the FDA has rolled those out, a lot of them aren't really being validated right now. It's all kind of voluntary, and we're just trying to get as many tests out there as we can. And one of the things that really needs to start happening, experts are telling me, is that we need to start making sure these things work the way that, you know, the companies say that they do. I know that the UK actually had a thing recently where they had ordered, you know, thousands of tests, and then the tests turned out not to work.
Yeah, one wonders what's worse, having no tests or having tests that don't work properly.
Yeah, well, I think yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah, right. I mean,
what would you choose?
I would choose no tests, but or at least I'd choose to know that they weren't working properly.
Yeah,
I think the absolute worst is, you know, having the tests and not knowing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, Maggie, this has been so great to talk to you and find out about your tools and about your COVID reporting. I should just tell folks, 538.com, that's where you'll find Maggie's excellent science reporting. And Maggie, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Hey, everybody, it's your co-host, Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of 3 people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheidt, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.